Reconvene, I guess, but from recess, and welcome to our guests that have joined us since we went into recess. You got here just in time. We are going into work session right now on HJR 52. Council, do you want to tell us what we have in front of us? And also, for those of you who may not have noticed, we have Madeline Wessel with us by telephone. Ms. Wessel was the attorney from the city attorney's office in Portland who was with us when we heard this bill the first time around. And we've got some Dash 7 amendments before us that are hot off the press. And since these are fresh, I wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to get her input on the record as well. So, Council, with that, if you would tell us where we are.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as you will remember, House Joint Resolution 52 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow political subdivisions to zone sexually oriented businesses. In addition to the Dash 7, which you just passed, that passed out, there is a Dash 2, which was discussed previously as well. Just to explain it, the conference call acknowledging the hearing room, please remember to try not to speak over others and wait until they're done, because sometimes it'll cancel each other out. Mr. Chairman?
Okay, thank you very much. Well, Representative Patridge, you ought to come on up, and Mr. Linden, why don't you too, since these are your amendments. And what I'd like maybe would be for Mr. Linden to explain what he was after by the Dash 7 amendments. And then, Ms. Wessel, if after he's gone, you want to respond to that, we can get into a good discussion about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Coalition for Free Expression and the Oregon Entertainment Corporation. These amendments are the result of discussions over the last 2 days with various members of this committee and legislative council. The first change, where in line 5, you delete the "to the extent permitted by the U.S. Constitution" and insert "notwithstanding sections 8 and 20 of this article," was an issue raised originally by Mr. Fidanke on behalf of the ACLU. Section 8 is the free expression section of the Constitution, the Oregon Constitution. Excuse me. And Section 20 is the privileges and immunities section. This would have the effect of bringing into play here, in terms of how this initiative might be interpreted at some point, other portions of the Oregon Constitution, but not those two particular sections. And those are absolutely necessary in order for this initiative, if passed, to work the way the proponents intended to work. The second change is the one that we discussed at some length on Tuesday, and this simply provides that one of these businesses could continue to the use of a building, structure, or land that's lawful at the time a city would adopt an amendment or an ordinance or regulation that is authorized by this initiative. In other words, they would adopt some sort of regulation that would make a zoning decision about a particular piece of property. And it would also make clear, this language here, that these uses, these businesses, are subject to all the laws governing non-conforming uses of land. And that's designed to make sure that these businesses do not receive any treatment that is preferential that other businesses wouldn't receive. So the goal here, at least from our perspective, was to make it clear that these businesses could continue uses that might become non-conforming if local government takes action, and that they're also not receiving any special preference that any other business wouldn't receive in the same situation.
Okay. Ms. Wessel, did you hear that?
Yes, I could.
Okay.
And I will handle my comments in the same order as Mr. Linden, and start with the first request that's been made of the committee to delete the lines "to the extent permitted by the United States Constitution" and insert "notwithstanding sections 8 and 20 of this article." I think we would not support that for a couple of different reasons. The first is that I think it's important to convey that what is being authorized here is simple consistency with respect to zoning sexually oriented businesses with what is currently allowable under the federal constitution. Second, although I do not pretend to be an expert on all of these issues, I think the deliberate referencing of two different sections of the Oregon Constitution might create problems with the referral on same subject, single subject, revision versus amendment kinds of grounds with which the committee may be somewhat familiar. We've seen some cases come out of the Oregon Supreme Court looking at those issues. I say that not because a failure to reference those provisions might negate such a judicial problem if it really exists, because that wouldn't be the case. The court can see behind language, and if there is a problem of revising versus amending the Constitution, they're going to look for it. But I don't think it's necessary to reference Article 1, Section 20 with this amendment, but by doing so, we might be inadvertently creating those kinds of problems for this amendment. So I think it's not necessary. I think it might create appellate problems. I would defer to legislative counsel to take another quick look at that line of inquiry, but I think it's unnecessary and somewhat confusing. With respect to Mr. Linden's other comments on a proposed new Section 3, I guess my concerns continue to be several. First of all, I think our position is clear that it is not necessary to clutter up what currently is a simple, easily understood constitutional provision that doesn't read like a statute. It reads like what it should read like, a constitutional amendment, with language that really looks like a piece of a statute. It is also not necessary because the constitutional protections of property are very clear and they are strong and they are well anchored in the federal constitution. If a city were to try to shut down an existing operating business suddenly because it passed a new zoning code, if this amendment is enacted by the people, the owner of the building would have lots of ways to make sure that the city had to pay full value for the property, and they do not need to have special language put into the Constitution to protect those rights. The other issue I see here is that the inclusion of language, building, structure, or land, could end up simply being an invitation to someone who wants to build these businesses all over Oregon to snap up a lot of land in advance of the amendment or in the advance of a code being enacted by a particular city, so that they could be grandfathered in simply because of the ownership or even an option to own a piece of land without even having established an ongoing business there. So it would, I think, have the potential very much to undo even prospective zoning that was undertaken by different Oregon cities in whatever ways different cities might choose to do that. The final point is simply a restatement of what state statutes currently provide, such as ORS 215, which sets forth nonconforming use principles already in state law. And I believe the committee may have also seen our Portland parallel provisions in our city code, which also create very strong protections for property owners on this nonconforming use issue. So it's code and statute-like language. It's already there. All businesses are already protected by these principles, and if they weren't, they could sue us and win because we would be taking their property. I see in some just a lot of potential for creating misunderstanding and confusion in the public for things that, I guess, in my best and most honest assessment, are simply not necessary to protect rights of owners adequately.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Representative Patrick, do you want to weigh in?
I don't know what to do except to concur. I think that we have very clean language. I think there's adequate protections. This is a referral to the voters. I think it needs to be clean. I think that there are adequate protections that currently exist. This doesn't add anything to the language. In fact, I think it detracts from the language and makes it a more convoluted and confusing issue. And I would ask the committee to adopt House Joint Resolution 52 with the dash two amendments that we presented before the committee and send it over to the Senate.
Mr. Fedanke has joined us. Ms. Wessel, he's sitting at the witness table. I assume that's because he has something he wants to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, David Fedanke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. I've not had a chance to discuss this language with Ms. Wessel, but it seemed to me that there were a couple of things that got said at the last work session that I just wanted to repeat, Mr. Chair. The current language of the resolution with the language to the extent permitted by the United States Constitution, I submitted to you last time that would have the effect of taking the entire Oregon Constitution out of play with regard to this amendment. There are some very intricate relationships between the state and cities and counties which are contained in the Oregon Constitution. There is much case law related to those relationships between the state and cities and counties. And in discussing this language with legislative counsel, I believe legislative counsel agreed with our assessment of the effect of that phrase. Certainly, what I had suggested to the committee last time around was to insert the additional language, notwithstanding sections 8 and 20 of this article, and retain the language to the extent permitted by the United States Constitution. That, I think, would make it crystal clear that the intent of this committee, even though it's an intent that the ACLU disagrees with, would be to permit zoning by local governments, notwithstanding the decisions that the Oregon Supreme Court has handed down to date regarding content-based zoning by local governments, which has been held to violate Article 1, Section 8. The addition of Article 1, Section 20 to that language, I believe, was the suggestion of Representative Williams to just make it crystal clear that in treating this class of businesses differently from other similarly situated businesses, there would not be a violation of the Privileges and Immunities Clause. Ms. Wessel may be correct that is unnecessary. There certainly is precedent in terms of existing amendments in the Constitution which reference other portions of the Constitution. I'm thinking specifically, Mr. Chair, of the provision in the Oregon Bill of Rights which reestablished the death penalty as the penalty for aggravated murder. The very beginning of that section says, notwithstanding sections blank and blank, citing the disproportionate penalty clause and another provision of the Oregon Bill of Rights. And I believe that has been challenged as a revision of the Constitution and has been upheld. I'm not certain of that. But I don't think that Ms. Wessel's concerns on that score would necessarily apply here. This language is pretty clearly aimed at one specific issue, and all that I'm trying to do, Mr. Chair, is make sure that the committee's actions, if adopted by the people, do not have the effect of throwing out existing case law with regard to home rule and the powers of cities and counties, in addition to throwing out the case law regarding free expression.
Committee members, Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chairman, while I agree wholeheartedly with what Mr. Fedanke has said, I would like at this time to move the dash 7 amendments.
Representative Wall moves the dash 7 amendments to HJR 52. was having some discussion about, I was going to say, is there any discussion, but I'm going to presume that there is discussion. So, Representative Witt, I saw you first.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to the Dash 7 amendments. I think they're superfluous. I think, if anything, they tend to undermine the bill. I think the language, together with the Dash 2 amendments, I think is the appropriate solution to what many people have seen as the problem. And I think the Dash 7 amendments are adding language that's both unnecessary and undermine the intent of the sponsors of the bill, and I'm opposed to them.
Just like I saw, hand over here, Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was my intent to work with the opponents to HJR 52 to draft amendments which, and let me state, I believed and still believe, frankly, at least as to those portions that deal with the zoning of current existing buildings, are unnecessary. But my thought was that if we could give them language that only restated what the current law would be with respect to those institutions, and by doing so could gain, I'm not sure I'll use the word support, but gain a lessening of their opposition to this proposal, that it was worth doing that. With respect to the amendments as to the notwithstanding sections 8 and 20 of this article language, it was an issue raised by Mr. Fidanke, which legislative counsel confirmed that in fact it would have the effect for all purposes of removing the Oregon constitutional provisions from any interpretation of this particular issue. My concern, initially, the offer was to just do notwithstanding Section 8 of this article, and I was concerned that Article, or that Section 20 of Article 1 might be used as another basis upon which these businesses could argue under a privileges and immunities clause that they were being treated differently and therefore continue to stop the ability for these zoning enhancements, and that's why Section 20 was added. The drafter of these from legislative counsel was, in fact, the attorney who handled the Armada case for the Attorney General's office, and I don't believe he would have done this if he thought that there was an Armada problem. So I don't think there is an Armada problem, but I think, you know, the policy issue behind that is certainly still open for debate. So that was my purpose, Mr. Chairman. It is not my purpose to hold this bill back based on these amendments, and I'm willing to support the chair. I don't necessarily think these are in fact perfect in their current form, and you know, I'm not a land use lawyer, and I think, you know, those impacts maybe have and do warrant some further discussion. But I wanted the committee to understand what the intent of trying to work with the parties was with respect to these amendments. It was my purpose was solely to put in the bill language that I think only restates what the current law is to give them some additional comfort. And I guess, Ms. Wessel, I'm interested, and I listened to your testimony, but I still was, I guess, unclear about what you think this grants them that currently the law wouldn't grant them anyway.
Do you want to respond to that?
I'd be happy to try. I think the concern with respect to what it might add on that isn't already there is the opportunity prior to the adoption by a city of a specific code that lays out locational restrictions, the acquisition of a lot of land or options to buy land that have a property status without having actually made the investments to put up a particular sexually oriented business, which would then be grandfathered in simply because of the ownership of the land itself. And I would not expect every Oregon city, if this amendment passes, immediately to decide to enact a particular zoning code. Many cities are likely to do nothing. Some may look at the issue and study it and want to develop a code. But I believe that language would grandfather in any land that had been acquired prior to the code adoption. That is not something which is required under land use principles as a pre-established use. If it's, for example, bare land and there's not been a permit issued for a building to be constructed there. So I realize this is probably veering off into more technical land use areas, but the bottom line is I think it would really negate the purpose of this, which is to allow the adoption of provisions that would regulate these uses upon the adoption of the code, not be burdened by someone's pre-ownership of a bare piece of land.
Sure. Don't be afraid to veer off into land use. We all know this is really a land use bill. Representative Williams.
Ms. Wessel, would you have objections to the amendments if, in fact, we simply, and again, I'm not going to try to wordsmith them right here behind the dais, but if we modified the amendments to focus more on the existing operating business?
I think that would certainly narrow the scope of this and create less of a wedge to drive a truck through. I would have to leave you with what is obviously an important policy judgment for all of you, which is whether it is appropriate to add a piece of a statute onto a constitutional amendment, which is probably substantively not necessary. As a lawyer, I don't think that is a desirable thing, but I'm not making policy, and it may be less of a legal problem if the language is narrowed. I would recommend against it. I think it'll create some confusion, but at that point, I think it shifts into a policy area.
Representative Patridge.
I just wanted to weigh in here as well and say that, you know, I have indicated to the opponents of 52 and to the drafters of the suggested amendment that I will continue to work with them, but at some point we have to move this forward. I have been very open and honest in this process from the onset and invited everyone in prior to the drafting of the language. So if that helps on the committee, you know, I'm willing to work on the language. This language just isn't it to make it happen, but we've got to move at some point.
Thank you. And I would say, too, I think that it's a foregone conclusion that whether the amendment gets in or does not get in today, this is not the finished product. If the amendment doesn't get in, your conversations are going to continue in the Senate, and there's going to be every opportunity to do that in the Senate. If they get in, the conversation is going to be about either whether they stay in or whether they should be amended. So in some respects, this really is a process vote just to keep the thing moving in the stream. And I guess if that adds any comfort to anybody who's feeling a lot of pressure about this. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those lines, and listening to what we heard from the lawyer up in Portland and listening to testimony, for me, my comfort level right now is to move the bill with the dash 2, let there be, again, more time. There's the other side to work this language out. We heard from Representative Patridge. I think there was a good faith attempt to try to come up with something. Clearly, it's still not defined. Whether or not that ever could be defined, I guess. I'm in the position to just move the bill with the dash 2 and let the dash 7 not be added to the bill.
Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, I want to echo what Representative Edwards has said. You know, I would point out to the committee members that the folks who have been opposing this bill, I believe, are now supporting the dash 7s, and they want that language for a particular reason, because they believe it substantively in some way changes the measure, the bill. And also, it seems there's been some discussion about certain folks won't oppose this measure should it come to the ballot if the dash 7 amendments are in there, but that's a very narrow group of people. It still opens the door for lots of people to oppose this bill. I don't think we should be making policy decisions based upon who or may or may not oppose this at the ballot box. I think we should support the language of the original bill with the dash 2 amendments and move it over to the Senate.
Any other comments? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was very interested in this kind of a proposal even before the session began, and I found out that Representative Patridge was involved in this, and so I joined him, and my observation is that he has made a really good effort to involve as many people as possible from literally day one. I think the dash 2 amendments are better than the dash 7, and I think it would make it cleaner, it would make it simpler to understand, less difficult to interpret. I think we're better served to go with the dash 2 amendments. And again, we do have a time crunch, and the Senate will be dealing with this. And so I think that would be the way I would feel we should go. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I missed the conversation we've had with Ms. Wessel. I was down testifying. I have serious concerns about this bill, or about this resolution, and I support the Dash 7, where we take out to the extent permitted by the United States Constitution. I agree with Mr. Fedanke about this problem. And I have serious reservations about passing out a resolution that seeks to overturn or ignore the Oregon Constitution in favor of the United States Constitution. It just troubles me to do that.
Okay, we have a motion before us on the Dash 7s. I guess we're probably as ready as we ever will be to do the vote on the Dash 7s. And I think rather than asking if there's any objection, why don't I just go right to the roll call and we'll do it that way.
No.
No.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative
Verbalov?
Aye.
Aye. Representative
Wells?
No.
Representative Witt?
No.
Well, we'll vote no on that, but I do want to say for the record that I fully expect that this is the beginning of the next level of conversation, and I think that if we've identified, I guess if we look at the bar exam analogy here, we've spotted issues, and these are issues that are going to have to be dealt with on the Senate side, or frankly, even for the proponents, these are issues that could become very problematic in the campaign. As we've seen before on some of these related referrals and initiatives, so I really do want to urge the parties to keep this conversation going on the Senate side, so that we can bring this back and concur over here to whatever you're able to put together. We have before us also the motion fails. Dash 2 amendments are before us. Chair, I entertain a motion on those. Representative Witt.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Joint Resolution 52.
Hey, Representative Witt moves the Dash 2 amendments into H.J.R. 52. I'll ask, is there any objection on the Dash 2 amendments? Okay, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I move House Joint Resolution 52 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves the H.J.R. 52 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Let me just look here. We do have a fiscal analysis for the election. It's less than $50,000, so we don't have a referral to Ways and Means. Okay. So this can go straight to the floor. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to recall some testimony on Dash 2. When was the intent of having this on the ballot? This is for 2000?
This would be November of 1999.
Any further discussion? Yes.
In closing, I really appreciate Representative Patridge's work on bringing this before us and his hours of working with various proponents and opponents or potential opponents to the measure. And I, as I testified with him when we first heard the bill, is for me personally, this is something that I've heard an enormous amount from my district. And I think when you look at who signed on to this bill, who's been working with this, it really has bipartisan support. It's across the state. And it's a good piece of legislation, despite perhaps this little technical cloud that's sort of hanging over it right now. I think really it really is a good bill, and I think the voters, once they have it, will support it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Witt.
I also would like to recognize Representative Patridge and the work he's put into this, and I hope that he will defend the language that we're sending over to the Senate and try to preserve it intact. Thank you, Representative Patridge.
Thank you. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Representative Patridge, for your work on this. And I'm going to be a yes vote in the committee today, but I'm going to reserve my right on the floor because I want to talk to you a little bit more about this language that really troubles me. So that's where I'll be today.
It's another love fest, just like yesterday. Yeah. Representative Lowe.
Well, I think you did a good job too, Robin. I really am Representative Patridge. I like the notion of giving the voters a choice about this zoning. I'm troubled about the realities of it once it is put into place in law and how cities are going to cope with saying, okay, here's the red light district. That's going to be a real, that really is literally putting a rock in the city's pocket. It's very troubling, problematic for me. Not because I don't like the concept, but just because I feel their pain. It's going to be tough for them. I would encourage you to work hard with Mark Nelson and the other people that are concerned about a fair and equitable grandfather clause that will also not open the floodgates for wholesale land options and purchasing, as we heard the one witness talk about, but that would be truly fair to existing businesses. Not that I particularly like that kind of endeavor, but just that I think that all businesses deserve respect. So I will be voting favorably on this, but I will also reserve my right, depending upon the language that comes out, to vote my conscience on the floor.
Thank you. And I guess I'll just, I will say I've told the cities, be careful what you wish for. You might get it with something like this. Obviously, the power to zone out sexually oriented business means with it the obligation to put it somewhere. And that can make the prison signing battle we've had here look like a walk in the park when those kind of things hit the steps of City Hall. Representative Wermelau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, one thing that has not been discussed at all in any of these hearings, and it rather has surprised me, although everyone has been very careful to say that this does not ban these things. We're just talking about zoning and all the letters that I get and people have testified. There's a very well-known concept about of constructively banning things, and this does not limit where a city or a government can actually place zone these things, and you could end up very easily with a constructive ban of the business that they are doing. And whether you agree with that, the type of business, remember, if you shut down one expression that you don't like, then what expression that you do like, somebody else may want to shut down. And we have a problem remembering that.
Representative Edwards?
I'd kind of like to respond to that, because when I testified, and again, I was testifying on my behalf, but I think you heard a lot from the proponents of this measure, that for me personally, this was in by no means a way to ban. And, you know, maybe that's eyes in the beholder, but I do think what we're trying to attempt is to give local jurisdictions a means to regulate where these are going to be placed. That is not a ban. You know, as you know, previous attempts along these lines have tried to go down a different avenue. I think this is a much more appropriate avenue, and I don't, I guess, share that same fear as you do, Ms. Representative Erdogan.
Okay. I think we've all spoken our votes. have you got them recorded, Nancy? Let's do it for the record.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Law?
Aye, with reservations.
Representative Berbelow?
No.
Representative Walker?
Aye, with reservations.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Federley?
Aye. H.J.R. 52, as amended, goes to the floor of the do-pass recommendation. Representative Patridge.
Thank you very much, Chair Shadley and members of the committee. I think everyone's worked hard on this. I will continue to work hard on this.
Of course, what I meant was you're the carrier.
Oh, thank you. I'd be pleased to carry it, and we will continue to work hard on this and look at language if more becomes available. And I just want to assure the committee of that. You've had very thoughtful deliberations, and I certainly appreciate that. Realize, however, that 48 other states and their cities and counties have been able to wrestle with this issue as well and not zoned out these types of businesses and at the same time protected their communities.
Let me ask, did I understand that Representative Croft wanted to co-carry this with you?
He was going to be my visual aid.
That's what I meant.
Mr. Chair, can we
re-vote? I should have said that before the roll call.
I apologize, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay, that takes care of our work session. Thank you very much, Representative Patrick. We have one more bill by telephone, so if you're getting up to leave, we ask you to do it quietly. We've got a telephone connection to make here, and I'll open...
Did you say goodbye to Madeline?
Oh, Madeline!
Yeah.
Hello?
She's gone.
Okay.
Well,
hello.
I got another bill I'm supposed to be getting on here, so.
Hi, this is the House Judiciary Committee calling. Is this button available?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hold, please?
Certainly. What radio station do you listen to?
Are you
calling a relative of yours?
Another brother.
Not related?
Brother.
Your brother?
Hi, Mr. Butler. Aaron Felton here from the House Judiciary Committee. We're about to go into session on the bill. If you'd stand by. Can you hear us all right?
I can, yes.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Butler, this is Representative Lane Shetterly. I'm going to... hit the gavel, and that puts us in work session here on House Bill 3504. Mr. Butler, I'll have counsel give us the background on the bill here in just a minute, but that's so you get the lay of the land. Your brother is sitting in the hearing room with us, and you've got a full committee and a few folks in the audience. Your voice is broadcast in the room, but I think we're probably on the internet as well. So welcome to the wide world of judiciary hearings, and glad to have you on board. Counsel, if you'd give us the background on House Bill 3504.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 3504 would allow an individual attorney to bring an action against a person for the unauthorized practice of law. Apparently, those are handled through the Oregon State Bar. Chairman?
Okay, thank you. Well, Representative Butler, do you want to proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tom Butler from Ontario, House District 60. We have before us today House Bill 3504, which discusses the and authorizes an active member of the Oregon State Bar Association to go ahead and bring an action to enjoin the unauthorized practice of law by another person. My concern relative to the unauthorized practice of law is that this is, it's my understanding that it's largely the responsibility of the State Bar Association to determine what constitutes the unauthorized practice of law and then take the necessary steps to strive to cure or prescribe cure for the unauthorized practice of law. The difficulty that we have in rural Oregon is that many times we're not... held at the same level of esteem and regard with regard to rushing people out from the Oregon State Bar Association to determine whether or not perhaps some folks are in fact practicing law when they are preparing deeds and contracts and those kinds of things. And so the instant case could probably be referred to today by Bob Butler Esquire. It's at his request, or Robert D. Butler Esquire, that this bill is being presented today, and perhaps he could give you some of the specific issues that would be of concern.
Thank you. Mr. Butler.
Yes.
You're on.
Yes.
You want to give us, I guess, maybe the sense of the lay of the land where you practice, and give us the concerns, I guess, that brought this bill forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Butler. I'm a lawyer in Vail, Oregon, which is a lot closer to Idaho than Salem, so we function a long ways away from the seat of government. I've practiced law for a little over 30 years now. The problem that we have and the difficulty that has prompted this is that when we had just a single title company in Malheur County, and I'm acting on behalf of lawyers in Bull Tourney and Malheur Counties. They both had problems. When there was just one title company, they didn't worry about preparing documents. They didn't need to do that. But when a second title company came into each county, then the new title company began preparing some simple deeds and other documents, and then the other title company had to do it in order to stay competitive. And I've talked at length with both title companies about this. They both would love to not be able to do this, and they both say, if you can get the other one to stop, we'll be happy to stop. They don't want the liability. They recognize that the people are not being served as well as they should, but it's a competition issue to them. We reached the point, finally, where we could see that it wasn't going to be resolved without giving us some teeth. The suggestion, the proposal we have, what really occurred was that the Harney County Bar Association filed a complaint with the Unlawful Practice Committee of the Oregon State Bar. The Unlawful Practice Committee investigated that complaint at some length and then ultimately made a recommendation to the Oregon State Bar that they prosecute this particular title company. The Board of Bar Governors, however, determined not to do so, decided not to proceed with that. They were afraid that they might open Pandora's box and open an issue that they didn't want to get into, and Harney County is far enough away, they decided not to do it. I've talked with the bar representative of the Unlawful Practice Committee, and he was a little perplexed because he felt like they had an excellent investigation and would have had a case that they could very well have prosecuted. All we're simply saying at this point is, give us the opportunity then, as an individual lawyer, to bring the same kind of injunctive relief under that statute and stop the people from doing this. And I think that if we were to bring injunctive relief against these title companies, I believe they would be happy to both say, fine, now neither one of us can do it, and therefore we no longer have the problem, the issue, the liability, and frankly the public will be better served. What's happening now is that as some of these decisions are made as to the selection of a particular kind of a document to use and so forth, the selection is wrong. Documents are being filled, blanks are being filled improperly, and several of the lawyers have had cases that have been arisen subsequently over these improperly prepared documents, and we're having to go through and clean up the things that have been done improperly by the title companies. Our concern, of course, is that that's not good for the public, and it's not good for the bar to have those kinds of activities going on. So we're simply looking for the opportunity to be able to bring those injunctive actions ourselves if the bar elects not to do so.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Butler? Let's ask Bob Olson to come forward. Bob, if you want to give us the bar's perspective. Mr. Butler, do you know, have you met Bob Olson?
I do. I have met him,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Bob is with us today.
Nice to hear from you again. Mr. Chair, Bob Olson, Public Affairs Director for the Oregon State Bar. We've looked at this. We've had our people look at that. I think Mr. Rue from our board and others have talked to both Mr. Butlers, and we're interested in understanding exactly the situation, what they're trying to do. We don't have a position on this at this point. I think we'd have some suggestions if you decide to move ahead on the bill. We probably prefer that we not have 13,000 lawyers out there doing this in the name of the Oregon State Bar, but things like that are more housekeeping than they really are substantive to the bill. I think one of the things we're trying to get a handle on, and the other day you met one of the representatives of our UPL committee, is what impact this would have, how much would it be used, and for what kinds of situations. I think the sponsors feel to be used on a fairly limited basis, and as long as at this point, I would say having them do that in their name rather than our name, and maybe have some kind of a notice provision so we would know what is happening out there would be helpful.
Let me ask, having never been involved in this, how often does the Unlawful Practice of Law Committee meet?
At least on a monthly basis, and sometimes more often.
So would it be feasible to require notice, or at least to give the UPL an opportunity to go first, or the bar, I guess, to go first, and a private action as a default, I guess, if the bar elects not to go forward?
I think that would be preferable to our people.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm just scratching for ideas.
Yeah.
Representative Orbelow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have concerns about this bill because I can see it being used as a harassment tool. It's kind of interesting to hear Bob down here testifying, because I remember in 97, I'm in 99 now, when we, and I also think 95, when we had paralegals here wanting to have a change of address, or change of address, to change of status. The bar, if I recall, was kind of adamantly against that. They'd supposedly been working on it for many years, but had never resolved it. And I know that out there, many times I hear attorneys in a casual way saying, that person is doing something that they shouldn't be doing, and the bar is letting it happen. And I think if you opened this up, you'd have a lot of suits, and many, much of the time for harassment purposes, if nothing else, because you'd soon discourage people from doing things they may be even able to do in a legitimate fashion. So I think I would feel more comfortable with this bill if it had language in there, kind of like the frivolous lawsuit. But if it is brought just for frivolous purposes, that the person that you are bringing it against is entitled to attorney's fees.
Senator Witt? I'm a little concerned that Representative Verbalow believes attorneys would bring frivolous lawsuits for their own purposes.
Must be something they do in Ashland.
Well, first of all, I think that they would be subject to sanctions if they were bringing claims without a good faith belief. They, under law, I believe they'd be subject to sanctions, and it seems to me that the point that Mr. Butler is making, and that Representative Butler is making in this bill, is that lawyers certainly have an interest in terms of legal work in their communities and who's performing legal work and who might be performing in an unauthorized manner. Now, maybe we could amend this bill to give the bar the first opportunity to bring the action, but I don't think we should be foreclosing the attorneys from protecting the quality of legal work and in their communities. And I really don't share the concern that attorneys are going to file frivolous suits or suits without a good faith belief. I think that's against the code of their legal ethics, and I think it also subjects them to sanctions.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
yes.
The proposed bill does, of course, provide the prevailing party would recover attorney's fees, so if there was an action brought that was frivolous, the other side would be entitled to recover attorney's fees against the lawyer.
That's true.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's already an existing statute.
Further on.
Lines 11 and 12 of the bill. Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Butler, I have one thought about this, and I do think that it is incumbent upon the legal profession to do everything that we can to make sure that legal services provided to the public are of a quality nature and are ethical. At the same time, I would like at least to put it on the record that one reason why there is a landmark paralegal business that seems to be going on in some sections of this great state of ours is because so many people don't have access to low cost or to reasonable, or they don't have the economic wherewithal to access the courts. And I would like to make some remarks about that, and I know for a fact that our bar is working diligently and hard, especially with the family court system and the family law lawyers, to come up with a user-friendly system for family courts. And I would encourage our noble and worthy bar to continue to work in that efforts to make law and the courts more accessible to the public. And with that caveat, I'm supportive of the bills with the changes that the good representative from Ashland has recommended.
Mr. Butler, if I may ask, you mentioned preparation of deeds. Beyond that, what other kinds of activities? I know in the terms of, I see two issues. I'm an attorney in Dallas, and so we're not quite as remote, but it's still very much a small town practice. I think we got your beat. We have three title companies.
Well, the other thing that I see is trust deeds and promissory notes. As you know, if if you're representing a seller, the best kind of a real estate transaction to protect the seller is a real estate contract. The worst kind of a vehicle is probably a trust deed, because he's basically limited to getting the property back. And so what's happening is, instead of having the real estate contract transactions where the seller has all of the remedies available to him, instead they're getting a trust deed with a promissory note which is usually filled out improperly. And so they're also doing, of course, satisfactions of mortgage and some things like that. And those are not the big issues. The big issues are going to be issues that affect title or that affect security.
Well, and how about, too, in terms of how they take title, that is, as tenants by the entirety, joint tenants with right of survivorship, tenants in common, do you see issues there?
I don't see that as an issue near as much because the title company knows how the title needs to be taken. And they're not making errors in how they're, in how, if they prepare a deed, that they're not making an error in how they're taking title. But what oftentimes happens is that maybe the selection of the type of document is not as proper as it should be. For example, the use of a bargain and sale or quitclaim deed when perhaps a warranty deed should be used in order to protect the benefit of the title policy. Mm. The title company might prepare that document knowing that in doing so, the title benefit of the title policy won't carry over, whereas a lawyer would protect the party by using a warranty deed.
Representative Orbelow.
Two things. First of all, I didn't make myself very clear, I think, when I was talking about the attorney's fees. I think that the attorney's fees clause that is there says the prevailing party, but somebody can bring a suit in, I think, in good faith, and not, and I don't know that attorney's fees should be available then. I'm talking about the frivolous kind of harassment lawsuit. They certainly should have attorney's fees. The second thing I want to do, this issue comes up in a much broader context. The southern part of the state, what we run into a lot, and this gets more not away from the title companies but more into the paralegals, that you can go into their office and they have the papers for dissolutions, for domestic relations, for bankruptcy, and so forth. And they are not supposed to be giving legal advice, but if you talk to the people who go in there, and understandably it does save them a lot of money, they go over the line. And so, I mean, this is, when we have to remember, when we pass this, we are not just focusing on title companies. We are focusing on lawful practice, period. And so I think we have to keep that in mind. And it's just not Eastern Oregon. These things happen all over the state. So we want to make sure it's crafted in a narrow way, I think.
Okay. Anybody else? I think what I would like to do, it's good to have an overview on this thing, and it sounds like the bar is willing to be helpful perhaps in fine-tuning this. I'm interested in seeing this back again. I'm making a memorandum as we speak to Representative the Speaker Snodgrass to get an extension of time on this one, given that this is Representative Butler's take-home bill for his brother. I'm sure the Speaker will look kindly on a request for an extension of time on this bill. And so that'll give you some time to work on this thing, and if we can help. Representative Orbelow.
Mr. Speaker, I have a
thank
bill
you very much.
For my brother, my mother, all my whole family. Could you please ask the Speaker?
I know what you mean.
Mr. Chair, if I may just quickly, the first opportunity for the Oregon State Bar to be involved in these kinds of matters, I'm sure is satisfactory. And a second, relative to this, the implementation of the bill, even with that amendment, would probably address the instant situation that we've got right now. We've got title companies who really don't want to be in a position where they have to be preparing legal documents, but because one does, then the other has to. And I appreciate the fact that these may sound, and even to me as a layperson, it may sound like just transferring title, but the way that I transfer title to a piece of property or receive title to a piece of property at the behest of a title company preparing a document for me may very well help me booger up and plan part of my overall estate. Basically it could be in violation of my estate plan if I have some title company preparing a document for me of that nature. So, by addressing the situation, the instant situation, in whatever fashion, by giving the state bar the first opportunity, what we would have is we would have the two title companies who are preparing the documents would immediately back away from doing so. And we're not talking about a lot of people I recognize, such as in the good representative from Ashland's area, but in two counties, recognize that that represents enough hundreds of thousands and literally millions of acres of land that that's a third of the state down there that we're talking about. So we're concerned that the documents relative to the transfer to the title of a third of the state's real estate be done properly and correctly and by a authorized member of the bar.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And since we're on the record, I would like to say one thing. I think this needs to be said. I don't see this as a full employment for lawyers bill. In my practice, I have made a very good living cleaning up do-it-yourself divorces that have gone awry over the years. And, I mean, that in itself is a full-time job. The other thing that I've become aware of is that now approximately 80% of the domestic relation cases filed in court are pro se. That means unrepresented, which means that the courts have to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to untangle the mess that people get themselves in by not protecting their rights, their children's rights, and by not having the paperwork done correctly. That's why I'm concerned about access to justice. But furthermore, it will be an economy for the courts if there is some sort of guidance for these folks who are going to insist upon operating pro se or a prohibition of some sort so that the work is done correctly and then the caseload isn't bogged down by all of us who have to go in and do cleanup jobs. So I applaud this bill for that reason, and it is not a full employment for lawyer act.
Mr. Chair, you might just mention to my brother Bob that you've been kind enough to fit House Bill 3504 in between, which is a lawyer's bill, and between two SOB bills. So he would
SOB,
sexually oriented business.
Oh, bills, okay. So. Yeah, never that acronym never did come up.
No, it sure didn't.
How do we finish three hearings on HJR 52 and not get to that? All right. Well, I appreciate your input, Mr. Butler, and yours, Representative Butler, and the rest of the committees on this. We'll put the VAR to work with you on this and see if we can come back, and I'll make sure we get an extension of time with the speaker's indulgence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, I will close the work session. Mr. Butler, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you for your time.
And with that, we are adjourned until 6:30.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to ask Representative Butler, is that your younger brother or your older brother, Tom?
He's come from the same parents. He's one of